geek. Talking baseball every week. Cause the Gleeman and the Geek.
And welcome to Gleeman and the Geek. Now what? Edition.
They're all that.
But yeah. I'm John Bonus, the Twins Daily. With me, Aaron Gleeman of The Athletic. Could also be it's not over till it's over edition. I don't know exactly what to do, but I thought we would talk about at least amongst the topics, A, you know, the latest Correa news, because that's also not over until it's over.
Yeah.
And I know people are going to hear about it. And B, you know, the off season isn't over until it's over either. You know, they still have a lot of money to work with, and they still have a lot of things they can do. But I think one of the things we're going to talk about is where they sit if they don't do a thing.
Yeah. Or, I mean, I'm pretty convinced they're going to do.
As well as take a look at some of the rumors and stuff that are out there.
Right. I mean, I don't have a fear, I guess.
They're not going to do nothing.
Right. I'm convinced they're going to do, I'm trying to, how would I phrase this, but I guess something. they're going to do some things.
Right.
But I think the fear, and it's well-founded by fans or people like us or whatever, is like, okay, well, free agency's pretty much dried up, although there's still, you know, some high-end role players or some, right, you know, fourth starters and, you know, low-end starter and shortstops and,
right,
corner outfielders, which we might talk about here in a minute. But, there's helpful players that you can still sign to 1 or 2 year deals or something like that, and I think the Twins should be looking to do that. I wrote an article last week. Here's 10 of the remaining free agents that they would be the best fits. And so right, we'll talk about a few of those that they might actually be talking to and might actually bring in. And so, yeah, that's fine. But, I mean, I think there's certainly a sense, or at least I have a sense of, no matter how things happen in free agency from this point. I mean, look, spring training starts in 6 weeks. I just booked my flight last night to Fort Myers,
right,
which is the only thing that has made me sane in a horrendous week, personally, for myself. But there's 6 weeks left. No matter what happens in free agency, whether we, you know, press stop on this recording and see on Twitter that they just signed, you know, two veteran players to free agency, or they drag this thing out until pitchers and catchers report and then sign a couple of guys, there's nothing they can do in free agency at this point that is going to check boxes, like that is going to check enough boxes for it to be a successful offseason on its own.
I would say there's no way they're improving from an 81 win team to an 89 team. Right. They're not going to sign a bunch of 4 WAR guys.
Right. There just isn't enough high wattage stuff available. It's right, just sort of at the margins at this point. And that doesn't mean they shouldn't do it. I mean, like you said, they have money. They have $40 or $50 million clearly to spend if their payroll is going to remain somewhat similar to last year. But, you know, you could sign, you know, I listed 10 free agents. We can go over the names in a minute. But if they signed the top 3 guys on that list, well, that would be the best case scenario at this stage, right, to sign the top three guys you think are the best free agent fits for them. But even doing that, they'd probably still have a little bit of money to spend.
Sure.
And the reason they'd still have a little bit of money to spend is that those guys are, you know, good regulars as opposed to stars or right, and even resembling stars. Right. And so naturally then you say, okay, well, they can try to do some things in free agency, and I think they will keep doing that. But either, you know, with that as your baseline with free agency, either the two directions they can go then is – not do enough in general, in which case 6 weeks from now we're going to be showing up in Fort Myers with a lot of questions about, like, what is the direction of this team? What is this just sort of a non-rebuild rebuild?
Right.
Is this a year where why is payroll lower? Why is,
right.
And I don't think that's going to be the case, but that certainly is a fear. Or the more likely, I think, scenario is they just got to make some trades.
Right.
And that's harder to predict or kind of pre-analyze,
right, or even
lay out the possibilities,
right,
because
right,
with free agency it's very easy, and the reason we tend to focus more on free agency than trades, even though the Twins have made a significant number of trades, you know, under this regime the last 6 or 7 off seasons, whatever it is, and even in season now last year, but it's I can tell you who the top in my mind, 50 free agents are, or the top 8 shortstop free agents, or the top, 10 reliever free agents. You can do the same with trades, except you can never have full confidence that those players are available.
That's one example. The other reason is
with free agents.
Yeah. Right. The other thing is that you've got a pretty good idea what the cost is. But I'm not talking about you just have to give up money. I'm talking about you can take a look at the free agents and get some idea of where money wise they are going to cost based on where they cost last year. And you add a little bit and you can rank them.
But with trades, right? It's very subjective. It's very much based on. I actually talked to a Twins front office person about this last year when they were – this time last year, basically, when they were rumored to be trying to trade for some frontline starting pitchers. They eventually got Sonny Gray, but everybody knows some of the other names that they were talking about. And I remember talking to one of them, and I said, what – is it strange to call up one team and say, hey, we're interested in Sonny Gray – and have that team say to you, well, we like Chase Petty. That's who they ended up trading for him. Mm-hmm. We also like this guy and that guy and whoever. I'm sure Cincinnati probably like Spencer Steer because they ended up getting them for Tyler Malley later. Right. And you call up another team and you say, hey, we're interested in, Frankie Montes or whoever it is. And that team's like, you got nothing we want. Or, we really would only want
Chase Petty. We don't want Chase Petty.
Is it strange to have it be such a sliding scale to where – it's not even about, one guy costs $5 and one guy costs $10. There is some of that.
Right.
But it's almost like one team is insisting they be paid in pennies. The other team is insisting they be paid in a long-term mutual fund that will give them dividends. It's well, these aren't even the same cost structure. This isn't even the same monetary system. So I think that's what makes trade stuff tricky. And with the Twins, there's also the question of, I do think they're going to make multiple, I don't want to say impact trades, but multiple significant trades over the next 6 weeks. But the question with the Twins is,
interesting that you say multiple, more than one, because I think everybody assumes that Kepler's going to get traded, right?
Yes, I do.
I'm not sure that I would count that as an impact trade other than as a subtraction, right?
But, yeah, I mean, it depends what they get. I don't know. I would say trading your starting right fielder for the past 6 years is –
right, it's an
significant,
impact.
But
I'm saying in terms of impact, in terms of adding, not subtracting.
Well, I mean, I say multiple trades. I guess I'm saying acquire multiple players. It could be this one trade that brings in multiple guys. Okay. But then the question becomes with that, are they going to trade more prospects, or are they going to trade Kepler or Rise or Sonny Gray or something like that? Because the tricky part with that, and we can get into some specifics here with pitching and stuff, but the tricky part with that is if you trade, Sonny Gray, which I don't think is an impossibility, has 1 year remaining.
Sure.
Any thing, especially in the Twins position, but with almost any team. If you have a good player and they're an impending free agent and you're not attempting to sign them to a big long-term deal to keep them there for the foreseeable future, you would be doing a disservice to not entertain what their trade value is. And so – I would be fine with the idea of trading Max Kepler, or the idea of trading Sonny Gray, or the idea of trading really any impending free agent or any player. I'll go even further than that. Any player who's kind of not in their multi-year plan. But the problem with that, and they can get some things done with that. I mean, you could trade away some Kepler, Gray, Arise. I know that's been rumored. But the problem is those trades are – on your end, are initially removing talent from the roster,
right?
Are making the roster worse. Now, if you trade Sonny Gray for a younger
pitcher,
that is
not the goal,
right?
And that's the goal of your rebuilding, but
exactly. And yet, you could say, well, why don't they just trade some prospects? And they may do that, but they traded half of their top, 15 prospects already to get Tyler Malley and Jorge Lopez. And these trades have not turned out well, but I think at the time they made sense, and so you're running out of possibilities on that front, unless you really want to gut the farm system, which, you may do that. And so, yeah, that's more what I'm curious to see. I mean, I think, and then you also have the Correa thing looming, as you mentioned, but which it has to be driving him nuts because A, he's one of these attention to detail type A obsessive type of people, which I think is part of why he's been so successful. I say this having had like 8 total conversations with him lifetime, but you know, and he hated how things happened last offseason, just from start to finish. I don't even mean he hated ending up with the Twins. That's a topic for another day. But like, he just hated that he was the last free agent standing. He hated that he had to sign a short-term deal. He hated that he had to fire his agent in the middle of the process. And you could tell he was very focused on not letting that happen again. He was trying to find a long-term home. He wasn't getting creative. He wanted a 13-year deal, a 12-year deal, an 11-year deal, whatever it ended up being. And he moved relatively quickly. I mean, he signed with the Giants second week of December. I mean, he signed before Christmas. Right. And then to have that unravel, and then I think his desire was shown in the fact that they immediately pivoted within 24 hours to the Mets. He didn't say, all right, well, we'll just go back to the drawing board here with free agency, because I don't think he wanted to drag this out. Then he immediately signs that deal with the Mets, 12 years, 13 or $315 million. And now that appears to be in danger of unraveling. And at the very least, it's been 3 weeks now since that deal was quote unquote signed. Right. It's been 2 weeks since he took his physical with the Mets, which is very strange.
Right.
Like, you just don't see that sort of thing. Now, I know Christmas and New Year's and all that stuff kind of – It's not a traditional time of the year for all that things. But now it's like, it's got to be driving him nuts that he's the last man standing here in free agency, as we just talked about. I mean, he's so far above the next best free agent. Right. I don't even know who the next best free agent is at this moment.
No, right.
The next best free agent might be like Michael Walker or Andrew McCutcheon or something like that. Right. Like, a 1-year, $10 million deal type of guy. He's looking at $300 million.
The way this has played out,
yeah,
the only reason for optimism is they both seem to kind of want to be there.
You mean the only reason for optimism that a deal will get done?
That a deal will get done between them at this point is it feels like the difference between how Correa's camp, particularly I guess Scott Boras, handled the Giants and how they're handling the Mets is 180 degrees. Right? Yeah. With the Giants, as soon as it was like, any question at all, great, we're jumping to the Mets. And the report last night that Boras is talking to other teams, including the Twins, since recently.
Now, the report
about
says
this.
They've been in contact.
been in contact. Right?
Now, if I call Rihanna and go to voicemail.
No, that's not.
I can say I was in contact.
I don't know. I don't know that you can.
I might need a new reference point. So Rihanna's like a mother now. She's like, I might need a new reference point.
I don't know. That's a pretty good one.
No. I mean, the restraining order has told me I need a new reference point.
I was just saying, Rihanna would be, Carlos Correa.
No, but in contact can mean any. I mean, the phrasing or the terminology we use in baseball, kicking the tires on, they've discussed pursuing, they've expressed interest in all these like phrasing.
Yeah, that reporters are very careful about what they use to describe that, because they don't want to be accused of going too far, but they want to make it far enough that it gains interest.
Correct.
So and a also lot of that little nebulous phrases like that.
It gains. I mean, obviously, you want your stuff to get read or whatever, but it's more, and I've been in this now this year on the few things I've reported. It's like you want to portray it in a way – any of these reports are going to get a life of their own. You know what I mean? The aggregators start picking them up, and people don't read the full thing that you report. They just turn their own headline, and then that headline turns into something. And before you know it, it's Twins are talking to Carlos Correa. And it's like, well, that – you want to not give as much kind of gasoline to things that you don't think deserve gasoline.
Right.
And so you want to say expressed interest in. You don't want to say negotiating with. You want to say have been in contact with, not, they – whatever. So I
agree with that. But my point is that how that has broken down with the Giants versus how it's happened with the Mets, where with the Giants it was immediate, and then it was immediately jumping to another team. It was almost an FU.
I think there was a lot of emotion involved in it. Like – you want to so screw different. With us here?
Right.
We'll just say screw you and sign with the Mets immediately at 3 a.m. the next day, basically.
Fact that this has taken 2 weeks,
but you can't,
is both good and bad, right? Is bad in that, they're certainly having problems working this out.
Right.
It's good in that it's like, then why are they both sitting at the table for 2 weeks?
Well, I will continue to hypothesize that the Mets went a little too far in publicly talking about it. I believe that and this is just purely my own hypothesis. This is not based on.
I will throw a hypothesis at you afterwards.
I think the reason that it's, you say, why are they 2 weeks into this thing and they're still talking through, like, why isn't it, like you said, why didn't they just say, you know what, forget it? Well, A, you can only do that so many times if you're Correa and Boris until now you're at 7 years, 140 from the Tigers.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly,
like,
right.
There's only so many $300 million teams. It might be that there are two.
Right.
And that number's probably dwindled over the last 3 weeks,
right,
if anything. But beyond that, I do think that – I don't think I've ever seen a significant deal where the literal owner of the team signing it talked about it as if it were a done deal.
Right.
Only to then see 3 weeks pass or 2 weeks pass and maybe ultimately not be a deal at all. I can't name a scenario where that's ever happened, which I can only believe that by speaking about it as if it was a done deal, it provides leverage or,
right,
you know, incentive for the Correa-Boris side to be like, well, the deal is the deal.
Right.
Now we're willing to kind of put in place some parameters based on injury protections or insurance and all that to make you feel better about the deal we've already agreed to, but you've agreed to it. Now, again, this is just my hypothesis, but it could also be just as simple as the Giants were number one. They felt screwed over by the Giants, or they were unhappy with how it went with the Giants, so they quickly turned to number two. And number three, whether it's the Twins or someone else,
right,
is, for whatever reason, not nearly as appealing. There is a big drop-off from number two to number three in terms of interest or money available or team,
right,
or city or whatever it is. And so you go, why are they just hanging on to this Mets deal? Well, first of all, because the guy, they agreed to pay him $315 million. I'd hang on to that too.
Right, right.
But like if the next team on the list – is $240 million, and even that team is saying, like, I don't know, we're a little skeptical. We'd want to have them in for a week of testing, and let's talk about this and stuff.
I think if you are the Met, to follow your hypothesis, because I thought the same thing, which was, if you are the Mets, and that is your hypothesis, that, and you decide, you know what, we don't want to do this deal.
Right.
Right? You can't be the one to walk away from the table. So what you've got to be doing is you have to
make them not want to do the deal, or
you've got to put in a clause such like, you know what, we just need a team option midway through the deal.
Right.
We need a team option midway through the deal. So yeah, the last half of it isn't going to be guaranteed, something like that.
Right.
And at that point, you know, you're kind of daring them to walk away, right?
So you can't fire me, I quit type of situation.
Right. But now, I mean, that's just a no-go. Now, if that happens and you're Scott Boras, like to bring up to your point, I got to figure out what else is out there. And it's really hard to figure out what else is out there, because let's say the Twins are like, you know what? We don't care. The 10-285, that's still on the table. Let's go.
Right.
You know, you want to take that? Go ahead and take it. It's pending a physical.
Right. That's the problem at this stage. And all deals are pending physicals, but clearly they've reached the point of this thing.
And by the way, our owner isn't going to go talk about it, so you're not going to have that leverage again. You know, we're not going to be stupid about it like Cohen was.
But yeah,
like,
I mean, once you've potentially had $200-300 million contracts scuttled by the same. And we can just talk about it now. It's his ankle that he hurt in 2014 in the minor leagues. He has a plate in his ankle.
Right.
Once you've had that happen, no matter how confident in the Twins, I mean, it wasn't an issue this season. It's never really been an issue in the major leagues. But like we talked about, it's different on a one-year deal or even a three-year deal than it is on a 13-year or 12-year deal. And just in general, teams are going to be much more protective of their own, I guess, the perception of what's going on here, which is that, like, if you are the Twins and your deal 10 years, $285 million is still on the table, which I would argue it should not be on the table, what would make you lead you to believe that anything over the last 3 or 4 weeks with Carlos Correa has had it so that you should leave your initial offer on the table?
What I would suggest is you could still probably get away with the 10-285, but it's still going to be pending a physical.
Right? And if you're the Twins or any other team, you're no longer in a spot where you can say, look, we'll run them through a physical and we're aware of this thing, because they are aware of it. They were aware of it. But Now everyone's aware of it. And so if he has an ankle problem in year three, or he just has to move to first base in year five, and he, you know, ages worse than you expect, and he's 34 years old or something, and he's already a part-time third baseman or something like that, you can no longer say, well, hey, what were we going to do? Like, we wanted this great player, and sometimes great players age poorly. They get injured. When everyone would go, well, yeah, remember that whole month when multiple teams backed out of a deal with it? And so I think teams are going to be much more protective of themselves. I think you're probably seeing that with the Mets, actually.
Right.
Like, of course. You know, the Mets are wanting to put in, it sounds like, and again, this is not my original reporting, but like Ken Rosenthal's written about it. Dan Hayes has written about it. It sounds like the Mets are basically saying, the parameters of the deal itself, the years and the money, aren't really at issue, but we're looking
to – we want some protection on the back end.
We're looking to provide an escape hatch, to hit eject on this thing. If year four, all of a sudden he slides into second base and the ankle from 2014 is an issue again.
Right.
And so what you can do is – and this, there's been some contracts like this. You can put –
and just so we're clear, Twins fans are familiar with bad ankles. You know, Polanco's Polanco's ankle goes bad, he's just a different player.
But you can put in specific language that's basically saying, not that if you're injured we can back out of this contract,
right?
But if this ankle injury proves to be chronic or keeps you on the 60-day injured list or ends your season early, and we can link it back to this specific injury. It's not that he hurt his elbow.
Right.
Or, you know, he busted his knee up or anything like that. You know, any random
injury. And that's easy to say, but to put that in specific language, like, is it a one trip to the IL for 15 days? Is it a 60-day trip to the IL? Right. Is it
end of your season? Does he have to miss an entire season? Does he have to?
Right.
So I think that's probably.
And is it, you know, right leg? Is it lower right leg? Is it right ankle? Is it like, you know, like that stuff's going to matter. It's going to matter to the team. It's going to matter to the players. It's going to matter to the insurance company.
I mean, the door continues to be open a crack, I guess, for the Twins. I would certainly be shocked beyond belief if the Twins signed him at this point. I would still be pretty surprised if he doesn't end up with the Mets. But I know there are people that are like, you know, if that door is open a crack because of how strange these circumstances have been, the Twins should not only keep their initial offer of $10,285, but should now say, we'll give you $315. Let's just match them. Let's get it done. And I get that. I mean, I'm sure that's tempting for the Twins to say, you know, we got an opening here. Let's just say screw it. But if you weren't willing to say that a month ago, which the Twins clearly weren't, you know, they weren't willing to go to $300 million. Sure. They weren't willing to match whatever. What that's taken place over the last month would make you more confident or more
When two teams with a lot more financial flexibility walk away from that contract, what makes you say, oh, that's a good contract? Also,
beyond the injury concern stuff, which is very real, for a 10-year, $300 million, you know, whatever it ends up being. I mean, you don't want to sign a guy for 12 years and go into year one of a 12-year deal already worried about something from a health standpoint. I would probably argue that there's a 0% chance of that going well, just in general. Yeah. But beyond that, like, he's just lost so much leverage.
Right.
Like, he may have still hold – he being Correa and Boris – may still hold some individual leverage over the Mets because of what we just talked about. But if the Mets are able to just back away from this thing, or Correa breaks off talks, like however it ends up breaking down, well, A, they're left with 28 suitors instead of 30, and the two that they've eliminated were by definition the two that were most willing to spend money and most interested in him. And then beyond that, it's been so long now since he was initially, quote, off the board to the Giants. I mean, it was right after the winter meetings that happened, that you've had two dozen other free agents signed since then.
Right.
And you've even seen, you know, like, even like deals
like the Cubs with Dansby Swanson signed with the Cubs in the meantime, right?
And I even, like, even beyond, like, guys like Eovaldi signed for, you know, $18 million a year. Right. And you would think, well, what does that have to do with Carlos Correa?
Do the Orioles still have money left? Do the Braves have money left? They just gave out a big contract.
Exactly. Like, so, you just have fewer, I don't know, avenues to get a similar deal. And if the Twins are one of the only remaining avenues, then that's to their benefit. But I would have such a hard time believing that the Twins could sit by through all of this and just basically say, we're here if you need us with the same deal. I just think logically that doesn't make sense. I think, you know, psychologically, that doesn't really make, I mean, because you're basically saying, you know, you proposed to somebody and they said, I'd really love to marry you, but this other guy also wants to marry me.
Right.
And then they, you know, they did a runaway bride on that guy.
Right.
And you called him and you said, well, hey, that's too bad about that. You know, I'm still here. Still like to get married. And they say, actually, let me go. I'm going to try to get married over here with this other dude. And if that one then breaks down and they go, okay, well, now I have – I got the wedding dress. I got my suit picked out for the introductory press. You want to just – you want to go get married now? If you're the initial person that proposed, you got to be like, well, this doesn't seem like the greatest thing for a lifelong partnership here, right? I mean, but maybe that's silly.
Think,
maybe
think that's – think how sold they were a month – 6 weeks ago. Do you know what I mean? That's I'm – when I try to come up with, you know, listen, there's a 100% chance he's signing with somebody before – before end of March,
who knows? Yeah, I would think that. But
if I'm taking a look at,
you should play a week with every team. What about that? One, just a series of 41-week contracts or 31-week contracts.
You know, the high point of the Mets was like, oh, they've got like a 55% chance of signing him once this thing kind of came up, and I think I gotta think it's down to at least 50%. Like there's something that's
the
going
problem
on,
is where do you because like people used to always ask us. What is the percent chance that Correa is signing with the Twins? And I said, I think we both said 5% or you said 3.5%.
At one point, I was up to 15, 20.
Yeah. The highest I ever went was 10. So I'm not, you know, I think remaining relatively
consistent. Well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go way higher on this than you are.
But here's the problem is like you can say logically, like the Mets can't be higher than 50% to sign Correa, right? To which I would say, maybe where are the other 50% coming from? Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's what I'm asking.
So if you're. If you're saying the Mets are at 50%,
right.
Are you still saying the Giants, who have publicly said we're probably not going to be involved in this at this point, are they still 15%? Are the Twins still fit? Yeah. Like, is there some team that's
that is my point. You see, you're coming at it. You're doing the approaching from the same thing, which is you're attacking the same thing, but from a completely different viewpoint. I'm approaching that and saying, okay, 50% left. How many teams can make into that 50% now, that other 50%? Or even if it's 40%. Right. Say it's a 60% chance, right? Well,
yeah,
like you said, maybe the Orioles, maybe the Braves. Cubs are out. Giants are out.
Yeah.
Yankees?
Could always be the
Yankees. Could maybe be the Yankees. Could maybe be in there. Like,
could
at
be
some point.
I mean, if the Dodgers just decide they don't care about the fans booing, they have the money to do it, obviously.
It could be. Right,
they don't have a shortstop. Yeah, I mean,
but of those teams, you gotta be like, I mean, it feels like there's the Twins are one of the top four, right? Well, or top three, of eight teams. That they got to give them a 5 to 10% chance still of being back in this thing.
Sure,
right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, we're back where we started.
I think I'm at like a 10 to 15% chance at this point.
Well, you're an optimist.
I am an optimist.
John.
We'll see.
I'm not an optimist. Not especially not after the week I've had.
I think if I'm Boris, I mean, looking at what Boris is going to deal with here, I think if I'm him, and this is also unbelievably risky, but I don't know if it really is that risky. It's also just weird. But I basically just say, listen, I'm sending all 30 teams. Here's Correa's medicals. Here's what everybody is concerned about on this angle. Because first of all, you're going to have to before I sign with somebody, you're going to deal with it.
I think they were
I might as well get it out there right now because I want to know if you're in or out.
Well,
I want to know right now what your offer is given this medical
stuff.
But
they're at that point already. That's not. I mean, they're at that point.
But the Twins know exactly what the Mets and the Giants know about the ankle, what the concern is.
Well, I mean, it's all the same MRI exam. Or
I would
X-ray.
Think so. Yeah,
I mean,
but
it's not. Yeah, I mean,
my point is, I hope he's sharing that information because if he can even have,
he has to be. We're past the point where he can be like, "Hey, listen, if you're interested, I'll send along the medical." Well, yeah, no shit.
You've got to.
I think we're past that point. I also wonder how much Correa is driving this in the sense that, like I said, he hated how last offseason went, and he clearly went into this offseason not wanting a repeat of that.
Sure.
And yet, for entirely different circumstances, which are also beyond his control, it's not like he could have done anything about something that happened in 2014. He's stuck in this spot where, like, he wanted to already be in his new place. He already probably wanted to have a house bought in San Francisco or New York with his wife and kid and all this stuff. And yet, he's still sitting here in the same circumstance with a different agent, and it's January, and he's saying, what the F is going on here? Right. And I wonder from his standpoint, And maybe this is overblown. Look, I mean, wherever you end up is where you end up. But like, is he just saying, I don't want to be connected now to seven different teams and have people joking for the rest of my career? Oh, do you remember Correa with the Giants? Do you remember Correa with the Mets? Do you remember Correa with the Twins? Do you remember? Like, I wonder how much of that weighs on him. Now, I'd let that weigh on me for $300 million. You know, I wouldn't care about that. But when you're already in position to be filthy rich for the rest of your life, which he is deservedly, do you say to yourself, I don't want this thing to get even messier than it already is if I can help it? And, I mean, let's be honest here from the Twins standpoint. It wasn't as if he said, let's flip a coin after the Giants thing happened when they backed out. He didn't say, let's flip a coin. If it lands on heads, I'll go back to the Twins. If it lands on tails, I'll go to the Mets. Right. The Twins were not really in the mix there at all. Like, he just went to the Mets, directly to the Mets owner, and Boris said, you want to get a deal done here. And that certainly signals that his immediate response to the Giants backing out of the contract was not, all right, well, that was a mistake. This was a mess. I'll go back to the Twins. That was not his first reaction.
Right.
And so at some point, it's like how many different scenarios need to play out for him to go, let's go back to the Twins. And then if he does say that, what is waiting for him with the Twins, you know, in terms of what offer would be on the table at this point? It doesn't surprise me that they're talking to him. I mean, why wouldn't they?
But they're also,
from the Twins standpoint, like, what are you, how are you viewing this situation? Because you can't just act like none of this is happening. Right. Do you know what I mean? You can't just act like the last 4 weeks didn't happen. You can't just act like it's the day you made the 10-285 offer. You can't just act like none of this happened. I mean, you can. Right. But just from a lot – you have much more information now, both about his health, about the market for him, about your team, about the rest of the free agent market, about the trade – I mean, you just have so much more information than you did. And most of it is not information, at least in my mind,
and more leverage.
Well, you have more leverage potentially, or he has less leverage.
Right.
Very little of that information, which you now have a lot more of, would lead me to increase my offer or even maintain my offer to Correa. Almost any shred of information they've gotten – Giants deal falling apart. Yeah. Mets deal falling apart. You know, the Cubs taking themselves out of the market for a shortstop. All these other free agents signing. All this other stuff. I don't think it would even lead me to keep the initial offer.
Right.
And so, yeah, I don't know. And I just feel like we're trying to update a situation that is not updatable. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's not actually anything happening from the Twins standpoint, really. I mean, they're just sort of sitting there saying, we're here if you need us.
I guess. I mean, I presume what has happened is they've gotten the medicals, like you mentioned. Yeah. I can't believe Boris would not be sharing what everybody else is concerned about, because he wants to know, given these medicals, what kind of offer are we getting for you? Because the Mets are making offers based on given these medicals.
But there's still thing to send an exam that was done by another team's doctor or whatever and send that around the league, which, that's probably happening. But from the Twins' standpoint, I mean, they're not going to –
No, you still have the pending physical. But the point is you need enough information to say, we're not going to insist on a team option, a universal team option after 7 years because we're worried about the last 3 years of your ankle.
Right, except that's also what the Giants and the Mets probably told them until they got their own doctor to look at them, and then their own doctor probably said, this is an issue. Yeah. So you can promise all you want based on some MRIograms that the Giants took and is now in your hands, but the Twins can say – if they wanted to say, we're comfortable enough here. We're not going to insist on this. We're not going to insist on that. But we do have to run him through a physical. What happens? You run him through your physical, and then your doctor says, "Hey, this ankle thing, it's legitimately a worry here." Well, then all bets are off. And how many times does Correa want to go through that? And how many weeks does he want to waste each time when there's 6 weeks left in this? I mean, if this goes on another 3 weeks. He's at the point he was last offseason, basically.
Except that he doesn't have the same leverage he had last. Like he had an escape valve last season that he doesn't have this season. The escape valve was a pillow contract, right?
Right. Because still do that.
No, he can still do that.
Right.
But there's no advantage to it. Last year it was like, the market was down. There was a stupid lockout. I just need to hit it fresh, top free agent name, etc. Right.
Right.
It's going to be like, good. You played one more year. Your ankle is still good for one more year.
Right.
What does that prove? You did that last year.
And if you
could prove anything.
If you could, it's not going to undo an ankle injury that happened in 2014. There's no undoing that. They need the thing from Men in Black where they can wipe the brain of everybody.
Right.
But yeah, he'll be a year older. Now, the free agent market for shortstops is much worse.
Much
he would
different.
Be just far and away the best shortstop, but he'd also be 30 instead of 29 or whatever.
29
and
so 28, yeah.
This offseason, I mean, we've talked about this a lot, the spending has been incredible this offseason.
Right.
I mean, not only above and beyond previous offseasons, but like 25%, Fangraphs wrote about this the other day, 25% roughly in terms of years inflated and money inflated overall kind of public projections. And those, you know, are subjective too. But you can't make the – like you said, last offseason was unique because of the lockout.
Right.
And somewhat unique because of the quality of the shortstop market.
Right, yeah.
This offseason had a good shortstop market. I mean, we saw two of them get basically three, including Correa, get $300 million.
Right.
But it was anything but hindered – in terms of spending.
Right.
I mean, spending, people were going nuts with 10-year, $300 million. I mean, more have been signed in the last 6 weeks or 2 months than have been signed in the history of baseball, I think, or roughly. And so, yeah, I mean, I think you come back – let's say you come back to the Twins and you just say, let's just run it back. $35.1 million.
Right.
Let's pretend I hadn't opted out. First of all, that takes a lot of – I don't know, swallowing of pride probably from both sides to make that happen.
Also, from his side now, there's just significantly more risk. You're joining the free agent market later, so the upside isn't there. You're joining it when you're 29 or 30, right?
Yeah, although you are crossing off.
And you're taking a chance that you screw up that ankle.
Well, right. I mean, he slid. It was in September. I think it was a road game because I don't remember it. But he slid and basically dinged the plate and kind of – got worried about it for a second.
Right.
But by the time he made it back to the clubhouse, he just realized, oh, it's just, you know, it hit my funny bone kind
of. Yeah, right.
But it only takes one more of those or two more of those or a real ankle injury of some kind to all bets be off.
Right.
So I don't know. I'm part of me is like just so done with this. Just it's exhausting.
Sure.
I can't imagine how it is from his standpoint or from a Mets fan standpoint or whatever, or from the Twins front office standpoint. Part of me is like, can we move on from this thing? Like, for better or worse, I mean, I don't think the Twins are better off for not having him, obviously, but at some point it's like, you got to move on with your life. You can't just wait for this same person to realize you're the one for them. You know what I mean?
By the way, how different is that, by the way?
But like, it is intriguing.
It was, you know, going into this 6 weeks ago, it was like, well, I think the Twins are the default choice. He really likes it here. And I was like, well I'm not sure that they were ever the default choice.
I never bought into that.
You know what I mean? Right. So.
Before we talk about some other stuff, including some moves they might actually make, besides John saying, what did you say, 98% chance they're going to sign Carlos Correa?
About that, yeah.
All the aggregators.
Give or take. I don't want to.
MLB
trade
rumors.
Right.
John Bonus says Twins are all but certain to sign. Let's talk about Raycon. I just got a new Raycon.
The everyday earbuds.
Yeah, they're good.
Yep.
I just popped them in. I was on a Zoom call yesterday that went for like over an hour. And whenever I'm doing that, I want a good battery life because the worst thing is you're talking and you hear that.
Right.
You're like, uh-oh. But also, my big thing is maybe I have bad ears, but like the physical feel in my ear, I get so sick of it after like a half hour or an hour. And I will say about Raycon compared to some other even more expensive brands, it the feel in your ear is good. If you're going to go running with it like John and Chrissy do, or you're just one of these people who sits on four-hour meetings with them or whatever, the battery life is good. The ability to connect via Bluetooth is very simple.
Yeah, that's the difference to me is I get frustrated like when I lose the connection or if I don't know if it's connected or not. Is it playing on my phone? These are just well-engineered earbuds.
Yeah,
that means a lot. Like if you have never had earbuds, that might not seem like a big thing. Like, how is it different than just plugging into a phone? It's a lot different than plugging into a phone. You need to know it's connected. You need to know it's unconnected.
If you've never had earbuds, these are very good ones to try because the price point is very reasonable.
It's well-engineered and it's good price point. That's
so here's called Raycon, R-A-Y-C-O-N, Raycon. If you go to buyraycon.com/Gleeman today, you can get 15% off your Raycon order. That's buyraycon.com/Gleeman to score 15% off. Finally, that's buyraycon.com/Gleeman. Okay. That's the Correa talk. I mean, either one way or another, we'll talk about Correa next week, obviously, but it's to the point.
We probably will.
I mean,
you're
Dan
right.
And I joked during the season.
By the way, if they do sign it, we will be doing an emergency podcast.
Yeah, we should say.
Including if it's over the middle of the night.
Yeah, which probably will be. All this stuff happens.
I was afraid this morning was going to be an emergency podcast. Yeah,
Patreon. P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Patreon.com/Gleamanthaler. An episode will react to any moves the Twins make.
Right.
Or perhaps don't make in some circumstance. Plus, I think we're going to do a mailbag coming up here, which are always good episodes. So, yeah, we'd love to have you join us. Like I said, 6 weeks till Pitchers and Catchers Report. If you join patreon.com/Gleeman right now, right. What are they talking about? It's going to cost them, I don't know, $4 between now and Pitchers and Catchers reporting.
That's right. Yeah, that's
so
right.
Join up.
And once we get Pitchers Catchers Report, we're zooming in on our spring training plans right now.
You're gonna be there the week after. I got my flight.
You're gonna be there the first day of full squad. I might be there even a little earlier than
John's
that.
John's just gonna move there, I think.
I might. Happen. Well, I don't want to be here right now. I'll tell you that. This 18 inches of
in this
snow
room
is for
with
the
me. Is obviously, finally, it's good you finally admitted it. I don't want to be here. Did you ever? Awesome. Were you ever pre-Chrissy? Obviously, although perhaps she said this to you. Did you have someone say, or did you ever say? Like on a third date or something, like, this isn't gonna. Did you ever have that? I've never had that. Mine were always post date. Like, you get home and you realize.
Like a mid date.
Did anybody
bail?
Ever just say, you know what? We're wasting our time here. I've fortunately not had that.
First of all, that was a long time ago. And second of all, I'm bad at remembering rejection.
That's all. Well, when it's all you have to remember, I'm good at remembering rejection. That's like the twin saying, I'm bad at remembering playoff losses. No, you're probably pretty good at it because that's the only, people can turn down a young John Bonas. I feel like a young John Bonas.
Well, I definitely had girlfriends who were like, in the middle of a day, are like, this just isn't working right now. Let's try again, like next week or
let's try again. Oh, that's interesting.
The date you've been at those where the date just you've been with somebody for a while, and the date you're just having a bad day together, and you're just like, let's just cut this date short.
Yeah.
I've had that.
That's why it's important to have a condo with many rooms.
Well, that's true too. Yes. Two bedrooms.
Right? Yeah. Okay. So Correa, obviously, we'll talk more about tomorrow, the next week, whatever it is, whatever actually shakes out with this thing. It's like I said, it's very interesting. Right. I wonder if the fact that the Twins are involved has made me quicker to sort of grow tired of it.
Maybe.
Like if the Twins were not involved at all, would I just be fascinated by what is one of the stranger?
I think that's right.
Right. Because with the Twins, it's such a tease.
I think it's tiring to the Mets fans. I think it's tiring to the Twins fans. I think it was tiring to the Giants fans. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Right. But if he hadn't signed with the Twins last year, if he had signed with, who even knows what would have been like, Milwaukee.
Sure.
Or something like that. Would I just be sitting here going like, this is just such a weird, I'm fascinated by this. And I'm sitting here being like, can this just be over? Like at this point.
Right.
But in terms of what the Twins are left with, what we also want to, we talked about this quite a bit, but like they've been linked to, as we talked about at the beginning, there are some good free agents left. There are no great free agents left by any means. I guess I can pop up my, let's see if I can find this. Aaron Gleeman on The Athletic. It's a young gentleman who's really putting out some good articles. Let me see what he had to say. So December 29th, I wrote 10 unsigned free agents who make the most sense for the Twins. And so I had some guy named Correa at the top. Schrodinger shortstop, as we call him. Number two, which I would argue number one, really, because Correa is a completely different – he's an entity in and of itself.
Right.
I had A.J. Pollock, corner outfielder who played last year
We need to talk about A.J. Pollock.
And we can talk about A.J. Pollock, but how I viewed the Pollock thing is we've talked – well, really since the beginning of last year, certainly since like August of last year or July of last year when the outfielders started dropping like flies and they were putting out just all lefties.
Right.
Guys like Mark Contreras, guys like Jake Cave, even with lefties on the
suddenly
mound.
Suddenly they missed Kyle Garlick.
Yeah, right.
Way more than we ever thought they would miss Kyle Garlick
for a month, and it's like, you can't go on without your 25th player or whatever, like this 29-year-old journeyman guy. But there was truth in that because they just had no right-handed hitters to be able to put out there, especially against left-handed pitching, but just in general. And so going into the offseason, we looked at the – first base depth chart, DH depth chart, corner outfield depth chart, and you have Kepler and Kirilloff and Larnach and Wallner and Nick Gordon, and I'm missing guys too. And you just had so – other than Buxton and Garlick, who we just mentioned, and Celestino, who really hasn't shown the ability to hit, period, yet. you just had no, very few right-handed options that you can plug in when you're just, you know, you're facing whichever team and there's a lefty on the mound and you're thinking, well, we shouldn't be starting Nick Gordon against lefty. Right. We shouldn't be starting Trevor Larnach or Alex Kirilloff or Max Kepler or Matt Wallner or on and on and on. But who are we supposed to be starting? And the Twins just had such a dearth of options there. Right. So we both assumed, I think, or hoped, that pursuing a veteran kind of fourth outfielder, almost like a 3.5 outfielder, somewhere between a third outfielder and a fourth outfielder.
Sure.
And if they can play center, that's even better. That, but a guy who
primarily interested in the right-handed bat.
Yes.
Right.
A guy who can be an upgrade over Garlic, either in terms of production, which is doable. Right. Garlic's been okay in that role, but in a pure platoon role, you want more. Or someone who's a little more capable of, hey, if you need him to play four times a week instead of two times a week, or you need him to play against righties and lefties because guys are hurt, you know, Garlic is just incapable of that. Right. He hasn't been able to stay healthy, but he also just has never hit right-handed pitching. He's a pure platoon guy. And so the names that we came up with at the beginning of the offseason, you know, there were Mitch Haniger and guys like that. But at this
point, those were more regular starter guys.
I mean, he got a 3-year, 40-something million dollar deal from the
What's
Giants.
Left on the market is sort of
a 1-year deal. One and an option.
1-year deal, and they might not be your starter.
Right.
Like they're
not, but that's fine. I mean,
right. They are a maybe not a pure platoon player, but they're not a full time player.
They're a 400 at bat guy instead of a 600 at bat guy.
Yeah, maybe even 350.
But that's fine. I mean, because I think the Twins' outfield depth, if you ignore the handedness or the stylistically, they have a lot of it.
Right.
It's just all very
similar.
They can
trade away a lot of it at this point.
Well, I mean,
they're looking to trade away a lot of it.
I wrote the other day that even if the Twins were to send Larnach and Wallner to AAA to start the season,
right,
they still have too many corner outfielders that are left-handed, like to find consistent at-bats for them. And so, so Pollock I listed, who was with the Diamondbacks for a long time, with the Dodgers for a few years. Last year with the White Sox, had a down year. He's 35 years old. But has previously been an all-star level player, has had some injuries and stuff. But he's a good hitter. I mean, he hits for average. He doesn't strike out much.
He's especially a good hitter for somebody who can play center field.
Yes. Although, I think he's more of an emergency.
It's not clear he's a center fielder
anymore. He has played a lot of center field.
He played a fair amount of center field last year, but that was there was injury related.
I thought he was bad in the corners last year watching him, the games he played, the Twins. Okay. But you know, he's been a 10 to 20% above average hitter over the course of his career. He hits for good average. He doesn't strike out much. He can hit 20 homers. He's off injured, and he's 35 and he's coming off his worst season, so he's a question mark. But I viewed him as someone who would, to me, be perfect for that sort of 3.5 outfielder role, which is if you're counting on A.J. Pollock at age 35 to play 145 games, that isn't going to happen.
Right.
But if you're counting on him to play every game against a lefty and half the games against righties or something like that, I think that works as sort of a platoon partner plus. I think Andrew McCutchen is along those same lines, a very similar situation.
Yep.
A formerly great player who's now 35 or so, had some leg injuries, but is still productive and good.
Had terrible start last year with the Brewers for the first 2 weeks, I think, of the year or something.
But then was
really pretty good for the last 4 months.
Right. And so if you could find a way to get him on a 1-year deal and he plays against all lefties and some righties, and then if injuries wrecked the depth chart again, he can play every day if needed. Right. I think Trey Mancini was another guy along those same lines, worse defensively, but similar. Like these are
Mancini still on the market?
Yes.
Okay.
And there's a few other, I don't know, Tommy Pham. There was a couple other guys that I kind of left out. But those were the three.
These aren't impact signings. They're just sort of fill a box that could be
It's a
need.
A good, solid, average player. Right. And at a spot where they don't have what Kyle Garlick is just sitting atop the depth chart all alone, basically, in that type of role. And,
if they signed Pollock to a guaranteed contract, I got to think Garlick is –
yeah, I mean,
maybe
he's
not
long for
the.
Well, he's on a 1-year, $750,000 deal. They would probably love to stash him at AAA.
But I'm not sure you've got any options left. I think that's why they got him in the first place.
He could, but he could pass through waivers maybe or something. Once you get, we saw this with Jarrell Cotton last season. We saw it with Jake Cave last season.
Right.
When you have a major league contract and you're being treated like a minor league player in terms of being sent back to the minors, being exposed to waivers, the major league contract almost provides cover in some ways because, I mean, they sent Jarrell Cotton up and down
right.
eight different times last year. And he didn't have – like, it wasn't because he had options. It was right. because he had, like, a $900,000 contract. And you put him on waivers, and there are teams who go, I'd love to claim him and put him at AAA. But do I want to pay him $200,000 more than the major league minimum to go play at AAA? And right. the Twins viewed that as almost like yeah. the ability to extend their 40-man roster
That's
a little bit. And so I think you could see that play out like with that. Garlic. Yeah. But, I mean, there's no – I don't – I feel like I'm being overly harsh against Kyle Garlic,
yeah.
who has done exactly what they hoped he would do and has found a niche in yep. the majors as a career journeyman.
Yeah. And I'm not sure that he's not better than Pollock at this point. I mean, I'm
– Right.
I mean
– Well, I think it depends on the role. Like if you said they're both fully healthy and you need one guy to start one game against a left-handed right. pitcher, I think they're comparable. Well, but the problem is – You're going to need more than that. I mean, we saw that with the Twins last year.
Especially given Pollock's injury history, which is, I mean, he was fairly healthy last year, right. but the last the 2 years before that, you know, and it's stuff like hamstring injuries. Right.
But Garlic
you
know hasn't I mean? Been able to stay healthy playing well, twice true. A week.
Well, that's why I like the idea of having them both around. Right. If you can keep Garlic at AAA See, I mean, to wait for the.
I think what we talked about at the beginning with free agency, like what is there left to do? These are the types of things that are left to do, which is right now, Kyle Garlic is your designated. You know, lefty mashing right-handed bat. That's fine. But given their spending room and their roster and the injuries that happened to the outfield last year,
right.
there's no reason to just end there. There's no reason to just go, yeah, we got Kyle Garlic. There's no reason, you know, it doesn't benefit us to go looking for more. Well, you should be looking for more. And especially, you know, whether it's a one-year deal, two-year deal, some option, whatever. My assumption is AJ Pollock – Andrew McCutchen, Trey Mancini, you know, whatever the similar skill set right-handed hitting outfielder of your choosing, if you're listening to this,
right.
are going to be available for, you know, a one-year $10 million deal or a two-year, I don't know, $15 million deal, something like that. Something within that range. There's absolutely no reason, standing where the Twins stand right now, that the money involved in that should hinder them at all. And what I mean by that is, if you view AJ Pollock, I view AJ Pollock as the best of that bet of that group, which I wrote about. I think McCutchen I would target second, and then Mancini I would target third. All three of them would fit, would check the box that I'm looking to check,
right?
In a acceptable way, and I think they're relatively close. Some different tools at play and everything depends what you prefer. But if they agree with me, and I think probably you, that Pollock is the first. Number one out of those three.
Right.
If he wants an extra $3 million, give it to him. Like,
maybe
what's
that,
the difference?
Maybe that's what's holding, I mean? Holding this up at this point. Right. I don't know. I mean, the other thing that could be holding up is from Pollock's standpoint, if you think, listen, I need to get enough at-bats to show I'm still a capable major leaguer, do I really want to jump in with right. the Twins here? They've got this other guy that they're going to have to pay $750,000 right. to, and if I struggle early in the year, what's going to happen if he's around, something like that.
Oh, I know this was an issue with Christian Vasquez.
He's probably looking for a full-time job, and right. now
– The Twins ultimately convinced Christian Vasquez that it was a
– By adding $1 million a year, right. Yeah, well, they were right. able to do that, right.
But I know that was part of the negotiations. I talked to a couple of people with teams – that he was also different right. teams that he was negotiating with. And one of them in the middle of negotiations said, we'd love Vasquez, but we can't convince him that our incumbent catcher isn't going to eat into his playing time.
Right.
And whether the Twins convinced him of that with Jeffers or, like you said, just offered him $5 million more right. over 3 years to make soothe his feelings on that, it's similar. I mean, I think probably McCutchen, that might be less of a consideration for, although Pollock's also 35. I mean, he might just think, I want the most money I can get right now because if I have another right. bad year. Whereas with Mancini, I think it would make more sense to me if you told me the Twins like Mancini, but he wants a three-year deal.
Right.
Then I would say, okay. And
well, that's crazy.
The other thing with – although he's much younger.
He's much younger.
But
right,
yeah. But with Pollock, he declined – he had a team option.
This is or
he
weird.
Had a player option for this season, for this offseason, and he declined it. To leave the White Sox, much like Carlos Correa did with the Twins, and it was for $13 million. And that's sort of the range of what I think he could probably get on a one-year deal. Like I said, 1 year, $10 million, give or take a couple million bucks. But maybe he just didn't want to be in Chicago,
right.
which, you know, Twins fans aren't going to feel badly about a person not wanting to play for the White Sox.
Sure.
But it makes me think that maybe he wants a two-year deal. or maybe he wants a 1-year deal with a vesting option, or maybe now what he wants becomes irrelevant at some point. But
I'm sure you do. I can't believe he turned down the 1-year $13 million deal.
But I mean, what do you think if the
Twins were to make him an offer?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm assuming somewhere around 110. But if you said to me he has offers on the table for either 1 year or 1 year plus an option, 1 year plus whatever, that are equal to or higher than $13 million, I wouldn't be shocked by that. I mean, maybe he just didn't like being with the White Sox. Maybe he talked to the White Sox and they said, we're going to make you a part-time player next year. You know, who knows? And maybe he thought, well, I can get $13 million with the White Sox. I might only get $11 million on the free agent market, but, you know, he's earned a lot of money.
Yeah, over he might his only get $8 million. I don't know.
I mean, look, if he's available for $8 million on a 1-year deal, or McCutcheon is, or Mancini is on that matter, for that matter, the Twins should sign one of them. I mean, they should.
Yeah. Well, for sure. I think they are trying to.
Right. Right. And so I would just say that it gets to a point, and I know the Twins like to kind of – they make kind of like boxes and they put guys
sure.
in where they – it's not – to them it's not a – we view A.J. Pollock as coming into the offseason as the number 21 free agent. And so we really want him a lot more than Andrew McCutcheon, who we rank as the number 32 free agent. I think they view things more as, you know, Mitch Haniger, A.J. Pollock, Andrew McCutcheon, Trey Mancini, Tommy Pham. These are all similar types of players. Let's put them in one category. Let's see how this thing shakes out. And whichever one is still available at a reasonable price out of this group of five players who are similar stylistically, that's who we'll sign. I get that. I think that's a smart approach. But I also think when you've whiffed on bigger spending attempts and you're sitting here on January whatever
right.
with $50 million to spend
sure, right.
and a clear need there, to me the money should – assuming it's a 1-year deal.
Right.
Or
right.
even a 1-year and an option or 1-year and a vesting, whatever it is. It shouldn't matter if it's $8 million, $10 million, $12 million. The difference between
right.
that
no, I get you.
Is not going to hinder them with everything. And the difference between your first choice and your second choice and your third choice, logically you might say, well, they're all kind of in the same boat. But you certainly do have a preference. And I do think those three players, like we said, Pollock can fake center field.
Right.
Pollock's a pretty good outfielder in the corners. Pollock has a little bit of speed. Well, you go to Trey Mancini. Trey Mancini is a below-average corner outfielder right. who plays a lot of first base,
right.
but he has more power.
Yep.
Andrew McCutcheon, he's older.
Not clear he can play outfield very right. well at all.
But draws a lot of walks.
Right.
He has a great clubhouse rep,
right.
star power, all this. Right. I mean, they all offer a little bit more. So I get, you know, kind of you're trying to compare apples to oranges in some sense, although it's just a barrel of apples.
Right.
It's just a bunch of right, yeah. good but not great.
Different kinds of apples is what they are. Right. You got the Honey Crisp, yeah. you got the Bray Birds, right. you got the...
Right. right. So you want a...
Which one are you tasting for? You got a Granny Smith
yeah,
over
Granny
here.
Smith.
Are you That's doing some I'm, baking or are you doing... Right. you something and, you can snack
so I would just argue, don't look at the price tags of these apples. Because they're all... It's an apple.
Right.
Just buy the apple. Whatever apple you want the most. Right. What you don't want to do, I would think, is wait 3 more weeks and then be left with your third choice. You know, maybe that's Mancini. Maybe that's McCutcheon. Maybe it's Tommy Pham. Whoever it is. Your third choice out of three just because it saved you $1.5 million for a payroll that is $50 million short of, right. of last season. So, yeah, I mean, I do think it makes a lot of logical sense for the next move to be adding a competent, solid, potentially above average corner outfielder with a right-handed bat. Those are some of the names that are prominent. They could also trade for somebody along those lines. I mean, that type of player is, right. is somewhat available. But you want a rich man's Kyle Garlick instead of Kyle Garlick.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, Kyle Garlick is kind of a poor man's Trey Mancini or a poor man's Pollock or whatever. They want a rich man's version of that. So I would like to see – I mean, we've been – banging that drum,
sure.
For I mean, months,
that, I think we both identified as that. You, I think, identified as like maybe the second biggest need. I had as the yeah. third biggest need when we first started this.
Right.
And they just, it's the sort of thing that you can address late in the off season because that's
right.
the level of players that are available
yes.
late in the off season. And they're starting to look.
I would just add to that: it's late enough. Address it.
right.
You know what I mean? There's
yeah.
no
right.
remaining benefit to squeezing this thing further.
Yeah, I mean,
and
you might, yeah, you might save $1.5 million, but you don't need right. to be saving $1.5 million
exactly.
bucks here.
The other area that there's been some talk is the rotation, Michael Wacha is the best remaining free agent there. The Twins have been linked to him. Dan Hayes reported some stuff in a Cole Byling I did, which I think some of the aggregators went a little nuts on that, but that's our own fault. That one is a little trickier because there is no need there today. There is no need for a third or fourth starter, however you want to view Michael Wacha, I would say, you know, 3.5, 3.5. There is no need.
But if you trade a pitcher.
Right. If you were to trade Sonny Gray or you were to trade, you know, whoever.
Right.
Or if you were to get to spring training and Tyler Mahle's shoulder is still a problem or Kenta Maeda needs another month to get ready or whatever it is. Then you have a need for that because otherwise you're just turning to Louis Varland or Semien, which isn't the end of the world.
Right.
But I think they'd like to avoid that. And so, you know, if you sign a Mancini or a McCutcheon or a AJ Pollock, it's very easy to just slot them in. You know their role. They're going to have a roster spot. You know, you figure out what to do with Kyle Garlick. For a Michael Wacha or a Johnny Cueto or whatever remaining free agent starting pitcher, it requires a second thing. You know, like there needs to be an equal and opposite reaction to that action. You can't just sign Michael Wacha. I mean, you could, and that's fine, but at some point something's going to give because you're not going to have a six-man rotation. Right. So that's the one that is a little trickier to me.
They also made a move this week that made me wonder if they are they signed a minor league – a former major league catcher for the Rockies.
Tony Walters.
Tony Walters, whose interesting part about him is he hits left-handed.
Well, he bats left-handed.
Similar
to Sandy Leon.
Fair point. Yeah, I was going to make that exact comparison.
I don't know why I start off on a bad note.
He's another Sandy Leon in that he's known as a good fielding catcher.
Yes.
Which means he's also known as a bad hitting catcher. And it made me wonder, especially after you brought up about 5 minutes ago with Vasquez, you know, does this allow them to also trade away Jeffers? I would be surprised.
I mean, I don't want to say I'd be surprised if they traded Jeffers. I think that's on the table potentially. Right. But I'm saying I would be surprised if this nudged that
in
the direction.
It just provides a little bit of a fallback option.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's the same.
I mean, frankly, they need a fallback option anyway. And that fallback option should probably be left-handed. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're shopping in the bargain bin, you might as well pick up a left. Right. Pick up the Honeycrisp that you like as opposed to the Braeburn.
Now we're just purely an Apple discussion podcast.
I don't want any Halverson.
Is that an apple?
I don't know.
Zach Halverson?
I don't know, maybe.
I wouldn't eat a Zach Halverson
that
apple.
That could be wrong.
Sorry, Zach. I wouldn't expect him to eat an Aaron Gleeman apple. Just the most bitter. The apple, like, uneatable, unedible. Well, I mean, let's.
The Halverson's good for baking, I'm guessing. Oh, getting baked.
I'm sure. The Gleeman one's good at that, too. Yeah, I'm waiting for that bill to pass so we can get some sponsors along those lines. But let's be clear about Tony Walters. Like, he was a starter or oft-used backup for the Rockies for like 4 or 5 years.
Right.
But the last couple years, he has spent mostly at AAA. He's bounced around quite a bit.
Correct.
He's 30. He was always sort of a backup caliber catcher. Now, even that's in some question. And it's just a minor league contract. Like, the most likely scenario is that
he goes to
Christian Vasquez is your opening day starting catcher. Ryan Jeffers is the backup who plays against mostly lefties.
I agree.
Tony Walters is the starting catcher for the Saints on opening day.
Yes.
And he kind of fills the Sandy Leon role. But the only reason we're viewing that differently is because Sandy Leon was pushed into duty with Ryan Jefferson's injury. And so I think they view it as, what are the odds? It's similar to a rotation.
I actually love the signing for Walters. What a great organization to go to. Right. Like, you've got two guys up there. One of them has spent most of the year hurt.
Right.
Like, you're the only left-handed option. You know.
Yeah. I mean, but it's like a rotation. I mean, we talk so much. We just did about starting five. You know, how can they sign Wacha? They got five guys. Right. Well, I don't remember a Twins season since we've been doing this where they didn't use at least 10 starting pitchers. What are the odds that you're going to get through a season using two catchers? Yeah. Nil.
There's a decent chance he finds himself on a major league roster for six to eight weeks.
Right. Whatever it is.
Year, right.
And I mean, they do have a couple of decent catching prospects. But it's like rotation depth. You don't want to be turning to the young guys immediately.
Right.
You want to have them truly be the kind of in-season reinforcement. So, yeah, I mean, it's a reasonable signing. I tweeted the signing and people were like, start the victory parade. it's a literal minor league third catcher signing. Right. And I think, you know, depth is certainly needed and good. I guess
any other trade options that you've got on there? Trade candidates. Did you mention Kim in your story?
Yeah, from Sin. No, this was for agents that I wrote
about. Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, the other possibility with the shortstop market is, you know, all that's left on free agency is Elvis Andrews and Jose Iglesias, which we've talked a lot about the past couple of years, actually.
Yep.
I think that from talking to Twins people that their belief is if either of those guys is an upgrade over Kyle Farmer, it's not by much. And so if the cost to get Elvis Andrews is 1 year, $12 million or 2 years or whatever it is, they kind of view it as, is he better than the guy we have as our kind of placeholder shortstop now?
Right.
And that's subjective. Obviously, you can argue that. I'd probably rank Farmer third out of three, but it's not a huge difference. And they have Farmer already. And so if 3 weeks from now, those two guys are still on the free agent market and nobody's willing to sign them to a deal that's commensurate to a starting shortstop, and they were available for a 1 year, $5 million deal as a utility guy or a part-time shortstop, then yeah, it makes sense for the Twins to potentially dive in there. But I don't know. I think they kind of view Kyle Farmer as the bar to clear there.
Yeah.
It's not a great bar.
As they should.
I mean, nobody's going to look out on opening day and go, well, Correa was nice, but at least we have Kyle Farmer. I mean, no offense to Kyle Farmer, who I've not even met yet, but he was the media good guy in Cincinnati last year. And that Cincinnati beat, I know our guy C. Trent Rosencrantz, who's the beat writer for the Reds with the Athletic, you know, he's a bit of a personality himself. So if you're the media good guy in Cincinnati, you're a good guy. You're chatty. And so I look forward to chatting with Kyle Farmer. I think he's an interesting piece that they picked up. But it's not that high of a bar. And yet, if you're looking at those shortstops, I think it's reasonable to say, I don't think Iglesias is significantly better. Is he $10 million better than him? And we've also gotten to the point where there's just roster considerations. I mean, it's a 26-man roster. You know 13 of those are going to be pitchers, which means you have four bench spots. Well, one of them is going to be Ryan Jeffers or Tony Walters. Whoever the backup catcher is going to be one of them. Well, okay. There's probably going to be a backup outfield. There's probably going to be a, you know, backup infielder, all this stuff. If you sign, you know, AJ Pollock, well, then are you keeping Kyle Garlick? Or as we just discussed, is he suddenly in St. Paul? Because you can't really keep two right-handed hitting corner outfield platoon bats on a four-man bench, really.
Of course.
If you sign Andrews,
right?
Well, okay, you can say, well, whoever's not starting between him and Farmer at shortstop on the day is the bench utility man.
But you've also got Nick Gordon.
We've also got Nick Gordon. You've also got, you know, Willie Castro, who they just signed to a minor league deal, who was with the Tigers for a while. And this is one of those things that, kind of like I said with the five-man rotation, it seems very important that we figure out what is the four-man bench going to be. But, you know, 6 minutes into the season, somebody's hurt and it all just becomes scrambled anyway. But it's important to – you can't just add pieces and then go, wait a minute, how many of these guys need to be on the major league roster? And you go, 15 of them. And you go, well, that's not going to work. You have 13 spots. So I'm not saying the Twins are overflowing with incredible depth, but like I said with the corner outfield, what they have now in place in terms of left-handed bats, it will if nothing changes, if Kepler's not traded or whatever – clearly, Matt Wallner is starting the season at AAA, which, okay, that's fine.
Right.
But I think probably Trevor Larnach would have to start the season at AAA if Kirilloff is healthy. Right. Because you just don't have five spots for left-handed corner outfield bats. You can probably get four spots for that if you want it, or three. And so, yeah, I think the Twins are at a point where, whether it's the bullpen, whether it's a shortstop,
I'm still waiting for a bullpen upgrade.
Yeah, that's the one I'm surprised by.
Yep.
And if you look at free agency, really, it's Michael Fulmer, who they had last season, and I thought was a good fit for them. I don't know why they wouldn't just try to sign him to a 1 or 2 year deal, something like that, $7 million a year or something. I mean, I think it's a lot like the rotation to me, the bullpen, which is if you look at the rotation and you assume everyone's healthy, They got five pretty good starters. They got a couple of minor league guys ready to step in. But what happens if Malley's not healthy? What happens if Maeda's not healthy? What happens if Ober can't make it through a season again? What happens on and on and on? Well, the bullpen's the same thing. You go, well, if everyone's healthy, man, they got Duran. They got Jorge Lopez.
Right.
They got Griffin Jacks. They got Caleb Theobar. They got Jorge Alcala. Except you say, well, Lopez was terrible after they got him. How can you count on him? Griffin Jacks has done it for one season.
Right.
Jorge Alcala hasn't pitched healthy and effective for a year and a half now.
Yeah. And hadn't had, you know, elbow debridement. Right. Like, it's just kind of a weird, so, it's not a straightforward thing necessarily.
To me, signing someone like Michael Fulmer, a right-handed reliever, would almost be like if they were able to sign someone like Michael Wacha without ditching someone from the rotation. Right. Do you know what I mean?
No, I agree.
The reason that a guy like Michael Wacha or even a guy like, I don't know, Johnny Cueto or whatever starting pitcher, you know, whatever number four starting pitcher isn't as appealing is because you would have to make room for them with a parting with or trading a better or as good or better pitcher.
Right.
That the same is not true in the bullpen. I mean, basically, if they added Fulmer,
right,
if they re-signed Fulmer, yeah, you're probably dropping like Trevor McGill or somebody like that. And he could probably even go to the minors. Or you're banking on Alcala not being ready for the season or some injury situation. And so,
I'm a little surprised they have not re-signed Fulmer already.
Yeah, I am too.
Yeah.
I mean, my sense was, I mean, they obviously liked him as a player. They traded for him.
Yep.
But my sense is they liked his fit. I think he was durable for them. He was mostly pretty good for them. He seemed to get along with a lot of guys in the clubhouse. He's sort of a good old boy and seemed to have a lot of friends.
My understanding is there are some people that lobby or, you know, kind of lobbying to bring him back. Like, you know,
but he's really the last right-handed reliever that I would be. I mean, there's always going to be relievers that you're like, if he's healthy, he could be good. But he's the last guy I would say I would be confident him protecting a two-run lead in the seventh inning on opening day. Do you know what I mean?
I hope this is not the case.
Oh boy.
I hope this is not silly, right?
Oh boy.
But I wonder if they are, you know, they've got a bunch of stuff kind of sitting out there like, we're going to take care of this and this and this all for like $7 to $9 million. We got, you know, three different things we'd like to do on that. But we got to wait until Correa signs.
I don't think so.
I don't think they're that involved. It seems crazy to me, but
I mean, I'd love to be proven wrong, and we'll, you know, last off season at this time we were saying don't bother talking about Carlos Correa.
I mean, especially because they've got you're right, because you know, the more I think about the sillier that is, because it's not like they can't trade away Kepler to clear up some room,
which is $8 million.
Like, they've got some other things they can do to clear up some room.
You could sign Correa for, well, they offered him $28.5 million a year.
Yeah, 20,
you could sign him for $30 million. You'd still have $10 to $20 million to go sign Fulmer and sign Pollock.
Right.
If you traded Kepler, I mean, if you signed Pollock, you wouldn't need Kepler. You barely need Kepler now. So, in terms of, you know, this is probably enough. I mean, I think one of the things I wanted to do today, I guess we can potentially do it next week if they don't do anything between now and then. I wasn't expecting this much Correa stuff last night, obviously.
Yes, right.
But we've focused so much on what they could do, what they should do, what they aren't doing.
And we did today.
And we did
today, too.
Right. Part of me thinks, like, have we talked enough
about where they really are?
About what, like, the actual players they have in place. Like, have we talked enough, other than the catcher spot, which we've talked a lot about how that's going to shake up because they signed Vasquez. But, like, have we talked enough about the infield? Have we talked enough about the bullpen hierarchy and where they're really at with that? Have we talked enough about even the outfield beyond the left-handed guy? I mean, who's the backup center fielder?
How about the bullpen?
Yeah. I mean, so maybe we'll talk about that next week. It's one of those things where that's an evergreen topic.
Right.
And they'll almost sort of decide for you if that's worth talking about.
That's right.
Because there'll be a week where there was nothing. This was a week where there was nothing, but there was enough to at least talk about. So we'll probably talk about that, I guess, next week. I would like to not talk about that because they've made 10 different moves since then. It's a weird feeling to know, you know, once you get past the new year and you start booking your flights to Fort Myers and you start, it's like, well,
you do start getting the itch.
Yeah. And it's like, well, even if you're confident that three moves are coming.
Right.
Well, they're going to be in the next month.
Right.
Like, they're going to be in the next, basically, it's like.
This is when the Twins offseason begins. It's about January 1st.
Let's see it. I mean, otherwise, this offseason, next offseason, we can't give that same speech of, I know it seems like they're not doing anything. We're freaking out, but just stay paid. Because all it's going to take is 1 year where that doesn't
they don't
play
do
out.
That, right. Yeah.
And then it's all out the window.
Yeah. You're right.
Okay. I don't know. Is there anything else?
I don't think so. We should probably thank Raycon for checking things out. Go to buyraycon.com/Gleeman and check that out.
Join us on Patreon.
Yep.
P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/Gleeman. As we ramp up any moves that happen in the season, then we'll start Pitchers and Catchers Report. Yeah. February 15th, John and I will basically both be in Florida right away, so we'll be doing live episodes from there.
Yep.
Maybe we'll do some interviews from people, or at the very least, you'll be able to hear the crack of the bat in the background and probably Fogarty's center field playing endlessly on a loop.
Yay.
That's what drives me nuts about spring training. And I also just want to say thanks to everybody who sent me a nice message or tweet or whatever about our cat dying. John and I talked about this for like a half hour before the podcast started, so I don't really want to get back into it, but it was a very sad week, but it made me feel a little better to see notes from people and pictures of their kitties and stuff like that. So
let's go.
All right. I decided the two things I'd like to branch out from for future from this show, when this show inevitably burns to the ground, either dispensary, like a partnership in a dispensary, you know, Aaron's Buds or whatever.
Okay.
Or just like a cat shelter. Those could be one and the same, I suppose. Like
we have a dispensary / tap room joint venture or something like
I
that.
I think that's coming. It sounds like I was reading some of the laws, like the proposals that they have, and it's like, oh boy, they might have something for John and for Aaron.
That'd be great.
These proposals. So, yeah,
those will be some silly podcasts.
Here's the thing. They don't know that what they've just listened to is not. I
was going to say. Yeah.
Is the FBI going to be at my door after I admit it's this weird limbo? But okay. So thank you for listening. New year, new. No, no nothing new. No,
nothing. New nothing. No. All right. We will talk to you next Friday, unless we've got something to talk about. I don't think we've got any Patreons scheduled for this week, but maybe we'll get
probably
some guests
we'll
on
you soon.
It's time. Bye-bye.